vote again.
Here we go.
So.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across this great country and the world. Happy Wednesday. Happy New Year. Hope everybody had a safe one. It's the start of the True North podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, a friend to me, Billy North, up there in Seattle. Yours truly playing a little co-host and producing out here in Los Angeles. Mark Mancini, 347-205-9631. This show goes by quick, 30 minutes. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I open this up, let me lay the red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, Billy. First of all, the threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And boy, I'll tell you one thing, you're bringing a guy in here where you battled in the 74 World Series.
Yep, and we were teammates in the 78 World Series. This is a guy that I had the opportunity to play with, and it was a wonderful opportunity. The one thing, if you talk about baseball players, one honor or compliment you can give them is to say that they were a good teammate. And Steve Garvey was a good teammate. He was humble, and he did his work. And he loved Billy Joel in 78, the song, Just the Way You Are. You remember that? This is Steve Garvey.
It's great to be with you.
Yeah.
Well,
this we have in life is memories. And I've always said that we're in the memory business of sports and entertainment, and on that journey, creating memories comes relationships and friendships and that bond that we have. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. Against you and with you, you epitomize what a professional should act like and represent, and I was honored to play with you.
Yeah, so was I. We had a pretty good team over there. I talked to Baker. And he said, get Garv on. And I said, that would be wonderful. And your graciousness and kindness in coming on is really, really. I want to get to a couple of things I have on my mind, though, besides Billy Joel.
the guy never had a bad performance either. You know, he gave you 100%.
I love the piano man. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
Now, tell me about this Bat Boy experience that you had at the Vero Beach.
Well, you know, parents were from New York originally. In 1948, my grandfather, who had this great gas station on Baldwin, Long Island, on the way out to the Hamptons, and his best client came in. It was a cold January night, you know, it could have on the Eastern Seaboard. And he said, hey, Joe, I got this motel in Tampa, Florida I can't get to. Why don't we, you know, you take May and go down there and get in the warm weather, and you've worked hard, and I'll just trade you the motel for a gas station. And, you know, those moments in our lives when we don't think things through, but it sounds great. Yeah. So my grandfather took the grease red and threw it out. Harry, you got a deal. He called up my grandmother, and he said, May, we're going to Florida. And she said, we didn't talk about a vacation. He said, no, I traded the gas station for a motel. She said, you did what? And my parents, it was post-war. My mother was working for American Airlines, and my dad was doing a variety of things. And so my grandfather called him up and said, Joe, Millie, come with us down to Florida, and let's see what kind of life we can make out of it there. Yeah. And they went down. There's always a reason why something like a motel is available. It was in a bad location, about 2 miles off of Route 301. For any of the mature people listening, that was the route from Florida to New York. And it was 13 units. And I always say something happened on the way down at a Stuckey's or a Horns. And I was born in December. You know, those vibrating beds were for a quarter. You know, you never know what you got. But anyway, So I was born and raised in Tampa, and by the time I was seven, almost eight, my dad was working for Greyhound. And the end of spring training, 1956, he came home and he said, "You want to skip school tomorrow?" And I said, "Wow, Dad, you never said that before." And he said, "You know, your mother's a Yankee fan and I'm a Dodger fan." I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I've got a charter tomorrow to pick up the Brooklyn Dodgers from the Tampa airport and take them to St. Pete for an exhibition game." And so, interestingly enough, my dad and two other gentlemen had just started the second Little League in Tampa. And this was a Tuesday, and the following Saturday, we're going to have our first opening season games. And I had a brand-new Rawlings Heart of the Hyde, you know, glove. It was $9.95. Yeah, things were a little cheaper back then, but it was a really good glove. And I was excited, but I said, "Wow, Dad, do you think I can maybe bat boy or something tomorrow?" And he said, "Well, Sam, we'll see." And the next morning we got up and we got the bus and we drove onto the tarmac of Tampa International Airport by the private hangars. The Dodgers, by the way, were the only team that had its own plane. The K-O-1.
That was K-O-1, huh?
Yeah, that's right, named after Walter O'Malley's wife. And so we're there about 8:15, and all of a sudden in the distance you see this DC-7 prop jet banking, and it was one of those, you know, pink, grayish mornings in Florida, and all of a sudden the plane lands and goes by us, and it Dodgers on the side and baseball on the tail, and it taxis up to about 40 yards from the bus. Dad and I were standing in front, and the door opens up, and the first person off was Walter Alston, the great Hall of Fame manager. And then it was Reese and Snyder and Ferrillo.
I'll bet you your heart will be beating.
I just started, you know, collecting Topps baseball cards, too. You know, this is when you start to get introduced to baseball. And my dad and I are standing in front, and the players are going by, and I've got these baseball cards in my hand. And my wife and I did a wonderful small book about 8-9 years ago called My Bat Boy Days, which chronicles the first chapter, this first day of my baptism into the game. And we say that as these players, you know, walked by, it was as if they walked off the baseball cards and came to life. And they were quite a 7-year-old eye opening, you know, to see these. And by the way, they had just beaten the Yankees in the fall of 55, so they were world champions. And so we, you know, finally the last two guys are Roy Campanella and Jackie Robinson, and they're walking together talking, and for some reason, you know, they stopped, and my dad, you know, in his handsome-looking Greyhound uniform, and I had a little band line shirt and jeans, and remember, we had flat tops back then, you know, with the old butch wax keeping the front up. And they stopped, and Jackie says, "Do you play ball, son?" I said, "Well, I am, sir." And he goes, "Well, son, you practice hard, and you listen to your coaches, and someday maybe you'll be a Dodger." And I shook my head, and I don't know if the words came out, but I was going, "Yes, sir." And then Roy Campanella looked at me. He says, "Son," he said, "but you got to study hard in school." And he looked at my dad, and he says, my dad had this name tag, Joe. He says, "Joe, is a good student?" My dad said, "Well, he's working hard. He's struggling with his reading." Well, you know, we used to back then call our kids hyper. You know, well, they're ADHD now. And what was
short attention span?
Yeah. So, you know, that's our children a lot of times. We kind of
Yeah,
a little bit, you know. So Dad says, "Well, but he's working hard. We're reading with him every night, and he's getting better, and you know, he's going to be fine." And then Roy says, "Well, son, you know, you can really practice and develop your skills, but remember, you got to learn how to think and problem solve, and you know, have options for you. And my dad remembers a lot of this. Of course, I was almost 8, but he patted me on the head, you know, and he gave that, you know, an ouch type of thing because of my porcupine hair. And got on the bus, and we went over to Al Lang Field, about 40 minutes away, where the Yankees trained. And that day I got a chance to be a bat boy for the world champion Brooklyn Dodgers and ended up playing catch with Gil Hodges before the rest of the guys got out, and got pine tar on my hands and rosin on my brand new Chuck Taylor sneakers, and carried the heavy bats around. And, you know, I always say that was my baptism that day. That was the day I fell in love with the game and blessed to, you know, be in my life. You know, I see eight. I'm 74, just turned 74. So the last, you know, 66, 67 years.
I got a follow-up, Mark. I'm sorry I got to ask this.
No.
Out of which of one those questions, I mean, which of those players ended up being a mentor to you?
You know, the traveling secretary and the clubhouse man really liked my dad. Dad helped him a lot, did little things. And so they started asking for him every time they came over from Vero Beach to the Tampa Bay area. So the next day, I think the team played Detroit over in Lakeland, and I got a chance to bat boy again. And the next year, I bat boyed a couple times. And then for about 8 or 9 years after that first day, or six, about 7 years, I got a chance to bat boy for the Brooklyn, then the L.A. Dodgers, at least 2 or 3 times each spring. And like I said, I grew up with my idol. But if I look back, Hodges and Reese were probably the two I looked at the most. You know, Reese was the captain. Hodges was the big guy. I resembled my dad a lot. But, you know, once I started, you know, when you get interested in something, I went arguably from the worst reader in class to the best within 2 years because I wanted to learn about baseball and read more about the Dodgers and all these things that, you know, become part of my life, and why Roy Campanella was really, I used to say Reese was the captain, but Campanella was right there with him. You know, he was directing traffic from final plate. Of course, we all know about Jackie Robinson, and I watched him and his demeanor, and I'd see this redheaded guy that was so nattily dressed with these Scotch strain loafers and you know, a nice blazer on, and I thought, wow, this guy's pretty neat. And it was Vince Scully.
I knew that was Scully.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, I was, it was my baptism into life too. And watching your idols, you know, living each season with them, getting on my bike as soon as school was over and racing home to catch, a World Series game, where when Don Larson threw his perfect game, I remember coming in through the door and seeing, the last outs, you know, and even though the Yankees beat the Dodgers, I was watching history. So I think over the years, people said, well, what's the thing, you know, what are the things that make you love the game? And I said, well, it's history, the national pastime. It's, you know, it's a lot about life. There's no clock, no time's going to run out. You know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's 100 and back then 54 and then 62 games. So it's a lot about, you know, the challenges of life and a daily basis and how you approach them and how, and you know, Billy, you know, how to manage yourself on and off the field.
Wow. Hey, Steve.
What a great – go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Mark Mancini here. You know, I know the benchmark to get in the Hall of Fame is 3,000 hits and 400 home runs. You fell a little short of that, but – how the heck did they not look at what you did? You led the National League and put out 6 times, field an average 5 times, total chances 5 times, double plays once. You're a legend there. They haven't been able to replace that position since they brought in Freddie Freeman last year in Los Angeles, and there's been a host of others that have tried it, the Mike Marshalls, the Greg Brocks. How are you not in the Hall of Fame, my friend, along with my sidekick, Dave Parker?
Well, you know, it's always an interesting dynamic in Hall of Fame voting, and I was on the primary ballot for 15 years. Then I've been on every ballot I could be on since then. I think, you know, finally Gil Hodges was selected last year, which, you know, made all of us feel good. And to know that this man who had deserved to be 20, 30 years earlier, finally made it. But, you know, he personified what I ended up believing in and trying to do, and that was to go out every day and to give 100% and to be a complete player, offense and defense, and contribute to your team's success. See, a lot of times people aren't measured when you think of Hall of Fame voting by the number of wins they were involved in and championships and, you know, how many All-Star games were they? I mean, I was in 10 All-Star games and won all 10. And, you know, my LPS is almost 1,100 and all these things. So arguably, I may have had the greatest, you know, complete All-Star career. But if you get caught up with these plateau numbers, and you do, like in my case, don't look at a body of work. And the, you know, I never lost an NLDS, five of those. I mean, one of those. Five NLCSs. I won all those. Won a world championship and participated in four of the World Series. That's probably, along with my consecutive game streak, which I take the most pride in, is the success that my teams had, and I think the integral part I played in them. And one of those big reasons was the emphatic will to want to play every inning of every game each year. And that led to National League consecutive game streak, 7.5 years, 1,207 games. And people said, you know, there must have been times when you could have sat out. I said, sure, I could have, but that's not who I was. And even if I was in a slump, I said, I'm not going to learn from that bench. adjustments, right? And nowadays, somebody said, do you think your record will ever be broken, the National League streak and the number four? And I said, I don't know how, because guys are given a day off regardless every 10 days.
They give a day off every day off a week to 10 days. And that right there, if we had that kind of compliment or that kind of action, it would have been, shoot, we would have played longer.
Yeah. But hey, Billy, if I would have gone to Tom Lasorda and said, hey, Tom, you know, let's talk about my load management.
Having a little,
hello? Can you hear me?
Might be going to, yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good, 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 good. I'm sorry, I got caught in the car and
no.
And I'm outside now. And the satellite's turning.
I just know this is one of the greatest interviews, and I won it.
But I never went to the mound once Lasorda was managing because, I didn't have virgin ears. But I realized that I wasn't going to have any influence on what he was going to do. You know, nobody's going to tell Lasorda what to do. And why should I go back and forth? But I'm just, I don't need the airtime. You know, I feel sorry for the pitcher, so I never went to the mound. But I did know Dick Williams, and I did know that, he was really an emphatic manager. When he went to the mound, he wanted that ball. And I know that he met his match and vice versa with Goose Gossage. And I don't know I think Dick always felt that he was going to have to wrestle him for the ball, and that might not look good. So he didn't do it. Gossage earned the right to challenge him, and it didn't work. But, I was blessed to play, 14 and a half years in L.A. and then 5 in San Diego. So I played, for a franchise that had great history. And then I was able to go to San Diego and really, with 84, start the history of that franchise. And with Gossage and Nettles and Tony Gwynn and Kennedy and Wiggins.
Now that you think about that, they had some players down there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was a teaching opportunity, too.
Yeah, and you say that, and I think the older we get, the more experience we get, we realize that, we've been blessed, and we need to give back. And the most immediate way is to take young players and to help teach them respect for the game. And, again, on and off the field, how to conduct yourself.
Just like we got, Gar.
Right.
As we were coming up, just like we got, I had Billy Williams, and what a wonderful man. And but there were guys over there that were just so, they took you, and they just tried to show you how to go about the game.
Yeah. And there was a way to do it, and that's never changed.
Right.
Now you can talk about training and new millennial players and this and that, but there is a tried and true way to approach the game, a way to prepare the game. I always say spring training was a time to build, when a team builds its camaraderie.
Right.
Sure, you're getting into shape, but every year, no matter what you think, a team has changed, three or four or five different players. And those players need to be integrated into the culture and environment of the clubhouse. And that's why older guys or contemporaries, we work with each other in order to build that team camaraderie ready for the first day of the season.
And it's amazing how much, if you ask any player what he missed the most in playing the game, the games, any sport, they'll say the boys, the camaraderie, and because you're together 7 months of the year every day, and it's that's what we got out of it. This is the dynamics of a baseball team in a locker room are a sociological study that would be beyond belief.
And there's books on that too. There's a wonderful book, I think it's called The Age of Innocence, and it's about the Dodgers and the once they made the transition from Brooklyn to Los Angeles, and it talks about four or five of the guys, I believe, maybe six, and it's so well written. And it talks about a couple of guys are older, a couple of guys are younger, like a Wes Parker, who didn't play in Brooklyn, but the each individual, and of course, books over the years have been written, and they all seem to focus on one thing, and that's the camaraderie and the merging of personalities. Well, just look at our great infield of, say, in Russell Lopes and myself, Ron Say from Tacoma, Billy Russell from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, Davey Lopes from Providence, Rhode Island, Steve Garvey from Tampa, Florida. I mean, you're looking at, you know, almost the country covered by four individual young men from different backgrounds, different color, religions, who fall in love with the game and work hard, develop their skills, and come together on a team. I mean, nothing's more inclusive than the game of baseball, as far as I'm concerned. And from the evolution of Jackie Robinson, that first day on the field, I think April 15, 1947, till today, I think that's what baseball has done better than any other sport.
Steve, we're down about 5 minutes. I thought the 70s were best in baseball. The mustaches, the uniforms, the personalities and everything. And me and Billy go back and forth on this one. Yeah, and the players too. And he thinks, you know, those A's teams where he played with were right up there. But I haven't seen a team since the 76 Cincinnati Reds that had an offensive machine. Nothing to take away from you guys and the A's and all that. And I'm 61 years old. At that team in 76, I don't think anybody's duplicated it down the line with all those the big red machine. Am I on to something, or is there other teams that we're not adding to the mix?
No, I think that you're right there. And, you know, God gives us life, free will, and choice, right? and you understand baseball and then history. But the greatest rivalry from 73 to, say, 84 was the Reds and the Dodgers. I mean, there'd be arguably 10, 12 All-Stars on the field. And you can plug in the 77 Dodgers being comparable to the 76 Reds. Even though, you know, there are more Hall of Fame Reds from that period than there are Dodgers. But on any given year, I think that period of about 10 years was what I call the golden era. When they say your infield averaged 145 games a guy, you know, when you pretty well knew who was going to be out there, and it was just before free agency. It was a golden era because fans and general managers and franchises worked hard, and they developed players, and they could keep them together, which they could. You had a period of 8 to 10 years where when you went to the ballpark, you pretty much knew seven of the guys that were going to be on the field because they were regulars. You knew them. You knew them personally. You knew about their families. And, I mean, the Dodgers used to every night on the scoreboard at Chavez Ravine used to go through their minor league system, you know, down on the farm, and they'd talk about the game, and then it's so-and-so pitched a three-hit, you know, shutout, or so-and-so hit a home run, and, you know, the Dodgers of the future type thing. So that's how people could track these fellas like myself, and, you know, the evolution of the, maybe arguably the greatest draft in 68, with Valentine and Buckner and Bishorek and Garvey and Say and Lopes, and I think there were 8 or 9 players in that draft that played over 7 or 8 years in the majors, which is phenomenal. But if you ask an older fan what they miss most, they'll say the continuity of the players on the team. But that's life.
Your team.
That's generational. You know, that's the evolution like the economics of baseball today. It's going to happen. But that we had it may be the greatest gift of all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as we wrap this up, Billy, I'll give it over to you. And boy, we got to cherish this interview and have Steve back.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, please. Let's do it during the season.
Yeah, that would be great. Steve, I thank you so much.
All right, thank you guys. God bless.
God bless.
Legends never die; they just keep getting better, and we're just so blessed to have both of you guys on here. Billy, let everybody know how they can reach you as we wrap this thing up.
Well, gosh, I'm inspired. That was a good interview. I just need to learn how to get that garbly gook out of there. But
no,
you can reach me at Bill Norte, BILLNORTE 15@gmail.com. And life is good.
Well, I'll tell you, you guys are going to be high in demand. They need that stolen base, so they might be calling you out of retirement, Billy, to get that stolen base record going. I mean, with the bigger bases now and the pitcher going over a couple times, they could definitely use you. I want to thank Steve Garvey out there in Palm Desert. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, out in Los Angeles. It kind of feels like Seattle out here today, Bill. We're getting a lot of rain with all these storms. But we will be back next week, same time, same channel, with another great one coming through the pipeline. For everybody that listened, catch it on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms where you subscribe to the podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. Have a good one, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. Tell everybody about it.
Thank you.